Today on Snail Trail 4x4, Tyler plays with more radios, and Jimmy talks about his dangle angle.
Snail Trail 4x4 is brought to you by Bestline Racing. Bestline Racing has a complete lineup of performance additives for your engine's needs. From our oil additives to our fuel treatments, we have you covered for your hobby, tow rig, race car, or your daily driver. Check the show notes for your Snail Trail 4x4 discount at bestlineracing.com.
Beat time. Welcome one, welcome all to the Snail Trail 4x4 podcast. If you like going off-roading in Toyotas, wrenching on Toyotas, camping in Toyotas, and maybe even poking a little bit of fun at Toyotas, and of course, hearing about how awesome ham radios are again and again and again. Woohoo! Then this is the podcast for you. That's right, ladies and germs. I am one of your hosts today. My name is Tyler. This is episode 127? Question mark? I'm going to check with my co-host here. Jimmy, A, how are you doing? And B, what episode is this?
I am doing well. Thanks for asking.
That's good.
And this is episode 127.
I'm glad somebody can keep track.
Yes.
When is our new producer getting here so that we don't have to try and keep track of this anymore?
I have no clue. I don't. I think we're just sort of waiting on him to tell us when he can start.
Does he even have a street legal vehicle?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because all I knew is that about, because all that was on his resume was that he had a buggy.
Oh.
And so I wasn't sure if he had another vehicle or not to get over to the studio.
Yeah, I think so. Uh-huh. I mean, he's got a, I'm pretty sure he has a Tundra he could drive.
Oh, okay. Ooh, what year? What year Tundra?
It's in the first gen.
The first gens?
Yeah.
Oh, that was the other thing. So,
the other thing
that we haven't discussed yet on the podcast, we were discussing beforehand.
Okay.
I think I said on a couple of episodes ago, there was three generations of Tundra.
Mm-hmm.
So what it is there's technically two generations, but the second generation, I want to say it was 2014, 2015, between those 2 years, saw a massive change. So it's like technically still the second generation Tundras, but
yeah, but it got like a facelift.
It got a big facelift.
Right.
So a lot of things changed about the truck, halfway through that second generation. So, but yeah, so you might have a Tundra.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I'm assuming since it's a first gen, it does not have a hood scoop to put a light bar in.
Nope.
That's too bad. Sucka. So anyways, we just need to call him.
Yeah, I think we just need to arrange a time for him to come in and, you know, to do a test run.
Okay, let's see if we can get him in here for the episode 130.
Yeah.
With our interviewee that'll be here.
Fun host or guest.
Guest that'll be here.
All right.
Okay, cool. That's neat.
Throw him in with the wolves, huh? Right. Like, all right.
Don't give him a chance to figure out how all the equipment works. He'll figure it out. He has thumbs, opposable thumbs. So, mm-hmm. So cool. Yeah, 127. That means this is coming into your ear holes on a Thursday. Congratulations, everybody out there, for making it to Thursday.
Yeah.
The week's almost over. And then you get to go have fun over the weekend, except everybody in California does not get to go have fun over the weekend.
Yeah.
Why is that, Jimmy?
We're still not allowed to go adventuring in national parks.
Nope. Yeah, all the national forests in California are shut down still.
Did you hear that? Because the president came to California and went to go check out some of the fires and just see what's going on.
Yeah.
And he pretty much said, he's like, I thought it was hilarious because he was like, California, you guys need to maintain your forests better. And California said, these are national forests.
Yeah. That is true.
You know, I don't know where the line is drawn then on
where does the funding come from?
Exactly. But I thought that was kind of hilarious. I get it, you know, from the president going like, hey, these are in your state, you know, and California's going, but these are need to be supplied from the national side of things, you know, like, yeah, well, California will maintain and monitor the California forests, you know, but the national side needs to, you know, cover the national side.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, either that or the forests need to become California forests, right. State forests.
Yeah.
I don't know how I don't know if I would really like that or not, but
yeah, I don't know either.
It seems to go back and forth. It all depends on who's in power at the time and whether they are OHV friendly or not, that person, that particular individual. Mm-hmm. Like right now, Tahoe National Forest, the forest manager is very pro OHV. So it's really cool. Some of the stuff that they are planning for Tahoe National Forest.
Yeah.
But I know that there's a couple of other forests out there that are not very pro OHV and they're just like, no, we just need to work on other stuff.
Right.
And not put any funding or any kind of focus into the OHV programs at the national forest level. So,
yeah.
So I don't know, we'll see how that goes, see how that works out in the future here. But yeah, so we have a semi-fun show for you since, you know, we didn't really get to go out and do anything this last weekend. You guys don't get to live vicariously through us. But we did get to do a couple of other, I guess, semi-fun things, some projects around the house. We're almost getting back into COVID project status.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
The COVID thing's not as crazy, you know, anymore, but now we have all the fires and they've closed everything down again on us.
The fires are getting better, though. They're getting a little more manageable. The temperatures have been brought down almost 20 degrees on average. I think a lot of that is due to the smoke cover. It hasn't been as bad. It's been getting clearer and clearer.
Yeah.
As each day kind of goes along. So it's not as bad. I know we've gotten a lot of people reaching out saying, you know, making sure that we're okay here in NorCal as everything's burning down. The Rubicon is still closed. All the national forests are still closed. And I believe that as of right now is going through September 21st minimum.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Wow.
And I have a feeling they're going to just extend it again.
Probably. So.
So we need to find some private property to go wheeling on. Or go out to Nevada or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Just get out of states. Moon Rocks. Let's go.
Yeah, we can go up to Moon Rocks. That's updates on kind of the weather, the fire. We did have some corrections from the past episode.
Yes, in regards to fire.
Regards to a couple of things, quite a few things, actually.
Okay.
People like to point out when we're wrong.
Yeah. Well, it's because we give them the satisfaction.
I know, right? So, a couple of the corrections. The gender reveal party that started the big fire was not at the Creek Fire. It was down in El Dorado, at the El Dorado Fire, which is kind of near in SoCal area, wherever it was in SoCal.
Those smart SoCal people.
Yep. So anyways, that was the gender reveal party. Supposedly, the Creek Fire, they think it was started by an illegal campfire. They're not for certain. They're not 100% sure, but that's what they're trying to pin it on right now.
Oh, interesting.
The meme with the
explosion in the background.
In the background, the picture.
Yeah.
Was the movie Desperado.
Yep.
With Antonio Banderas and Selma Hayek.
Hayek. Yeah. Yep. So thanks, Ultra Ford Jones, for telling us that one.
Chris got it too, but Kevin got it first.
Yes.
And then, Chris from Wheeling Wine and Whiskey informed us that the electricity you get from eating lifesavers,
twisting crystals, yes,
is called piezoelectric.
Piezoelectric.
There's a word to add to your Scrabble dictionary.
Way to go, smart hashtag smart Chris money.
Yeah, right. So we have Grumpy Chris, and then there's Scrabble Chris.
Scrabble Chris. There you go.
And then the other thing we got corrected on, I don't know if it was really a correction, but a lot of people wrote in, I had maybe at least six to seven people, if not more, write in to inform us that almost every fridge in the off-roading market has a low voltage disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have our low voltage disconnect set low enough on our fridges, even though we have it at the lowest setting.
Right.
So just letting you guys all know out there, we are very aware that fridges have low voltage disconnects, and we have already set them at the lowest settings, and they're still not staying on.
Right.
So we did some testing.
We did.
On the fridge after that episode.
Mm-hmm.
What did we find?
So we plugged the power cable into the cigarette lighter and plugged a multimeter into the back of the power cable.
Mm-hmm.
and we got, I believe it was 11.9 volts.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when we unplugged...
It was 11.95, but 95. Yeah, 11, yeah, right around there.
So a little, yeah. Okay. And then when we plugged, we pulled out the power cable and we checked the power inside of the cigarette lighter and we were 12.0.
No, it was like 11.96.
96.
Maybe 0.01.
Yeah.
Over. But then we went and checked at the battery terminals.
Yep. And I think it was right around the same.
12.05.
Oh, 0.05.
Yeah. So we are getting a 1/10 of a voltage drop between the battery and the end of the cable that plugs into the fridge.
Right.
And most of that seems like it's coming at the cigarette port. We did not test the wires on the back of the port to see if there's 12.05,
right,
the same as the battery, at the wires rather than inside the cigarette port. But man, that would require taking apart the dash and the cigarette port and everything right there.
Yeah.
So, the fridge runs directly off of the battery, but it will not run on the cigarette port.
Correct. So when we hooked it directly up to the battery with the cable, it turned on and ran
just fine.
So the point, or the 1/10 volt that we're losing, is the amount that we need to run the fridge.
Yeah.
But so if it runs for a while, then it'll draw that point, that 0.1%, and then it won't be able to run anyway.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. I'm guessing that low voltage disconnect, for some reason, the lowest setting it goes to is 12 volts, which seems high for an LVD on a fridge. Most of them, you can set them down to like 11.5 at the lowest. So I don't know. We'll have to do some more playing around with it and see if we can figure out a way to trick the LVD, the low voltage disconnect, into going lower.
Right. Yeah, I had... Beer Andy wrote me and he told me that he's like, why don't you just hook it to the inverter in the back?
Yeah.
You know, and the problem is that the fridge does not have, is it AC or DC?
The fridge does not have an AC
cable
with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm probably going to look into, that's probably the direction I'm going to look at and go for Charlotte, but I might run an Anderson power pole cable, for Bobcat.
Yeah. I think either way it would work. The other option I'm going to explore with, because I finally got to do some testing. Nobody wrote in and said, hey, just run your fridge off of the AC on my Rock Pals 500 watt lithium ion battery.
Yeah.
Watt hour. The 500 watt hour lithium ion pack, because I talked to Rock Pals and they said there's no timer on it. However, so they're not sure why it was shutting off, but they did say that it will automatically shut off once the battery reaches 60%, which is...
So it's a battery saving.
It's a battery saving thing. Mm-hmm. And then apparently it'll go from 60 to zero if you want it to. So what happened was I did testing. Recharged the battery pack up to 100%, plugged my fridge in the AC port on it, and then ran my ARB fridge off of the AC port on my battery pack. And it ran because the AC is essentially an inverter. It's regulated, right? It's a regulated voltage from the battery pack out the AC port. So with it being regulated, it'll give me the full voltage all the way until the battery dies on it. And I was able to run my fridge for about between 20 and 22 hours. It died somewhere between that time frame of checking it. If I was running the 12 volt on it, it should run like 45 to 50 hours. So what I think I'm going to try and do is buy a lithium ion regulated inline 12 volt regulator. And Goal Zero Yeti has one for their Goal Zero battery packs.
Okay.
So I think I'm going to buy one. It's only like $40. I'll buy it off Amazon and test it. And if it doesn't work to regulate the power, then I'll just send it back to Amazon, return it. But yeah. if I can get the fridge to go from a 20, 22 hours to 45 to 50 hours on 12 volt, I would be very, very happy with that setup. But you asked on the last episode how long it took to recharge my battery pack.
Mm-hmm.
It took, from 0% battery, I plugged it in at 7 a.m. and it was at 100% around between 2 and 3 p.m.
And that's charging off of the house.
Off the AC, the house. So 5 hours to charge the whole thing off the house. I haven't tried to charge it fully off of the solar panel yet, though.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyways, that's the updates for the fridge stuff.
The fridge stuff. Yep. I did get my NoCo battery jump box
in
actually yesterday, and it's currently charging right now.
Okay. So you sent back the trickle charger?
Sent back the trickle charger and exchanged for Amazon just had an exchange, like you can exchange it when you return.
Okay.
And they cost the same. And so I was like, I want that one. And then so no money out of my pocket, and I got the part I needed.
Nice. That's always helpful.
Yeah, that was a bonus.
That's cool. So you're going to be trying using that out tomorrow. Do you know how many watt hours or kilowatt hours or anything that charger is? The jump box?
No.
Okay. I was curious. I don't know what mine is either. So
it's a 40. I think it's a 40 amp.
A 40 amp. Okay. I don't know how much that would translate to in terms of wattage and watt hours or amp hours.
So. Yeah, I was actually, because when I was talking to NoCo online about, hey, what, you know, I got the wrong thing. Is this, I approached it as like, hey, I think I got the wrong thing, but what, how do I check this?
Yeah,
how do I
make sure?
How do I make sure? You know, I wanted to, you know, it was my fault. You know, it wasn't like, hey, you know, you guys have horrible branding, blah, 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 you know?
Yeah.
So I contacted them, and then the person on the other end, I was doing a chat and they're like, well, what are you going to be jumping? You know, and I said, well, I've got a 2.4 liter inline four or a 3.6 liter V6. And they're like, okay, you should have this, get this one.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. Because otherwise it was like, well, I'm jumping a 7.3 liter diesel.
Yeah.
I'm going to need their biggest, gnarliest one.
You need the 2000 cranking amps.
Yeah, exactly. So I got there. It's like their second smallest one on there.
Nice. And that works just fine for
it's sufficient for
nice.
It's up to I think it's up to 7 liters for gas engines.
Okay,
but it's like 4 liters for diesel engines.
Yeah, diesels require so much more compression. Yeah. Cool, that's cool. So that's here.
It's here. It's charging. It's
cool,
gaining its power, and yeah, and so I'll use it whenever I'm allowed to go outside.
If we ever get to go back outside.
Yeah, right.
Very cool. So awesome. Let's get into a couple of updates for the Gear Wrench Ultimate Garage giveaway.
Okay.
So that is going on. We have seen at least a few. I think there's been at least 5 now entries into Corey's Gear Wrench Garage giveaway.
I
was going to
say, I've known of 4. Mm-hmm. So if there's another one that went in there, yay.
I think it's either 4 or 5. It might be 4. But so that's cool. Right now you have a 25% chance of winning $10,000 in tools.
20 to 25.
20 to 25. There you go. Yeah, 4 to 5. So you have $10,000 worth of tools up for grabs here. And all you have to do is enter the Gear Wrench Ultimate Garage giveaway and then take a screenshot of your entry submission and send it over to us. And both of those links are down in the show notes. And every single show note since it started, I want to say August 17th is when they launched. Right. So every show since August 17th has had those two links in it. That's all you got to do. And it's pretty quick and easy. You just need a 2-minute video of either get your buddy, your kid, your significant other, or your producer with opposable thumbs to shoot a video of you explaining those 3 questions that Gear Wrench wants to know.
Yep. I heard Dino's for hire too, if you want.
Dino's for hire. Good luck. Good luck getting him to do anything. Yeah, check that out. And then make your submission to the Gear Wrench Ultimate Garage giveaway. Make your submission over to the Snail Trail Gear Wrench Corey's Ultimate Garage or Garage giveaway.
Yeah.
And then we'll announce the winners in December. Or winner. winner for the runner-up giveaway. Yeah.
Or we'll announce the winners, whoever won there the ultimate go. One, and we'll say congratulations to them, and then we'll figure out who our runner-up was.
Mm-hmm.
We will be reviewing the videos.
Yes.
And we will be watching them with Gear Wrench Corey, mm-hmm. and we'll be going over them to determine the winner for that. So, but hey, we actually have some of the product mm-hmm. in for the, is going to be of the giveaway.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the items here is a 3-piece ratchet set. It's a 1/2-inch drive, 3/8 drive, 1/4-inch drive, 90 tooth. They're extra long handles with the silicone grips at the bottom, and they have some locking flex heads.
Yeah,
so the head can tilt, like, I think it's like 90 degrees each way.
Yeah,
which is pretty far, and they'll lock in place, which is really nice. So when you're like wrenching, it doesn't twist back and forth on you or loosen up, you know, loosen the head while you're wrenching things around.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even get a chuckle on that one. All right. But I have a set of these in the shop today, and I was using them, and it's, I kid you not, the 1/2-inch drive one is about 1 inch shorter than my small breaker bar.
Yeah.
It's not, like, they're long,
mm-hmm.
and it's nice,
mm-hmm.
and it's, I was gonna go grab a normal.
Were you breaking things with your flex head ratchet?
I was not.
You were not.
I used my breaker bar. That's why the breaker bar was out. I used the breaker bar to break them loose, and then I used that ratchet to loosen things up.
Okay.
I had to break it loose with the breaker bar. Then I used the ratchet till it became loose enough to use my impact driver.
Oh, geez. Okay. Because, I've always, like, as soon as you get something broken loose, just use the impact. But
yeah,
if it's still too tight,
it's still too tight for the impact.
That just means you need a bigger impact.
I agree.
Oh, man.
Milwaukee, soon, get in contact.
Soon, right? We need that Milwaukee sponsorship coming on here.
Right.
Nice. So, those are really cool. The nice thing about those is the girthy handle to it. We're going to have a contest soon to see how many times we can use the word girth or girthy in an episode.
There you go. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's very, it fits your hand. The girth of that fits your hand great.
I can't continue with you anymore. So anyways, what are we talking about?
It's nice not to have the, you know, like a cold metal feel in your hand, and you have this big girthy silicone feel.
Like, never mind. I'm not going to go there. Anyways, I agree with everything you're saying. Wrong one.
Which one should it have been?
This one?
Yeah, that all worked.
So, very cool. Yeah, no, it's a really cool setup, and that's one of the items I wanted to highlight that's going to be in the garage giveaway, Corey's garage giveaway here. We're going to be kind of going over a bunch of the items kind of as we go along here. So, like Jimmy said, we already have some here in the shop, and we're going to put together another big list with Corey about what you guys, the winner, will be receiving from what are we calling this thing? The garage giveaway? Corey's garage giveaway
runner-up snail trail edition.
There we go. So
I think it changes every time.
It does. It totally does. So anyways, that's really cool. That's some good stuff. Another piece of feedback from a listener.
Yes.
Which is Sean.
Oh, goody.
So, he said that he loved the last episode we did about the rock landing, stuff to take rock landing.
Oh, cool.
He was a little disappointed, though, that we didn't mention any lube. So I told him that might be coming out in the next Monday's episode.
I want to know what kind of rock landing he does. He needs lube.
Brokeback rock landing?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, I'm sure he'll answer and give us a message, give a little shout out there. But he also said that he drives in a cab over vehicle all the time, and it's really hard to listen to the podcast. So I said that was great, and we were just going to talk more shit about him.
Perfect.
So
I think, I mean, we did an episode on like 10 essentials that you need to take rock crawling with you, and lube was on that list.
That's true.
And this, that last episode, we were primarily talking about camping. True. And you don't really, I mean, don't really need lube.
You don't need it. No. It's not a necessity.
You need fuel.
Yeah.
For cooking.
Yes.
I don't know what you were thinking about.
I was thinking cooking. Okay. Same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Totally. Totes, bro. So another couple things I wanted to go through was a couple more reviews.
Okay.
From some cool listeners. So we are up to 170 reviews.
What?
Almost all 5 stars.
Wow. Awesome, guys. Yep. Thank you so much.
So thank you. Those are a huge, huge benefit and a huge way that keeps things kind of moving along and gets us into more ear holes out there.
Yes.
So here's a few more. We have a YJ Nate. It says, awesome off-road podcast. I'm a Jeep owner, but this is an excellent off-road podcast. Well, thank you, Mr. YJ Nate. We may have some information for you here a little bit later in the show. And all you other Jeep lovers out there. Anyways, next one is from Mr. Hot Rod 73. I feel like I've read these ones already. This is a very entertaining podcast. I have a JK and a Sammy and a 2-wheel drive Toyota, but love listening to the show, even though I wheel a Jeep. Great show. So another Jeep owner. And then Tim,
they're out there.
They're out there, I guess so. And then Tim 1986 says they aren't the worst. Hey, yeah, we're not the worst off-roading podcast out there.
I'll accept that.
I'll take it. He says they're okay. I mean, as far as Toyota guys go, I guess. ..
He must be a Jeep owner too.
He must be a Jeep owner as well. So today, I thought that was pretty interesting. Those 3 reviews kind of came in all kind of close to each other, and all being probably from Jeep owners. Tim is up in the air. He may be a weird, like a Samurai owner or something that nobody wants to talk about. Yeah, so
maybe a Rover.
Maybe a Rover. Sorry, not sorry. Anyways, so I had some information for Jeep owners out there.
Oh, really?
Yes. And it kind of, it got me going a little bit just because
how
it's an hybrid Jeep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So Jeep released or is getting ready to release in 2021 here for the 2021 production year, I should say, the 4XE Jeep Wrangler, which is 4x electric. So it's a electric hybrid Jeep Wrangler that comes in all the Wrangler trim models, I believe. The only one that I really paid attention to was the Rubicon. It does come in the full Rubicon model.
Cool.
What's really cool about this this Jeep is that it takes the 2-liter turbo 4-cylinder engine and combines it with 2 electric motors and a 17.3 kWh lithium ion battery pack.
Wow.
So the lithium ion battery pack sits underneath the rear passenger seat. And then the 2 electric motors are positioned at the input shaft of the transmission. So between the engine and the transmission, which is called a P2 a hybrid. It's a phase 2, I guess. So there's essentially 4 phases, 4 P's you can put in a hybrid. never mind. And one of them is a motor assisted engine. Okay. So the engine is assisted kind of like a starter kind of thing, right? And then the next one is the positioned between the engine and the transmission. That's a P2. And then the other one is at the output of the transmission before your drive shaft. That's a P3. And then the fourth one is at the wheels. So this is a P2, a hybrid setup. And what's really neat about a P2 hybrid setup, it is a belt-driven motor connection with these 2 electric motors. It replaces the torque converter.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. So you don't have a torque converter anymore, which is really interesting. So I don't know how they're connecting it. So the engine is still spinning, but the transmission doesn't spin when, say, you're in park or if you just haven't put your foot into the gas yet.
Must have some clutches.
has to have some kind of clutch, right? Mm-hmm. So I haven't gotten that far and figured that out yet, but it will take your 2 liter turbo 4-cylinder engine in your Jeep and make it produce 375 horsepower and 470 pound-feet of torque.
Dang.
Which is the most powerful Jeep to date. And since there's no torque converter, it is instantaneous torque.
Right.
And it can go 25 miles on just pure electricity. So nothing else. So you can run the Rubicon, supposedly, on it. I guess if you're not running other electronics in your vehicle at the same time.
Yeah.
Supposedly.
It can go 25 miles on flat pavement.
On flat pavement, exactly. Yeah. So,
as soon as you try to crawl over your first rock, your battery's going to be dead, probably, because it needs to use way more effort to go over a rock.
I don't know. I mean, yes, it would. Yeah, compared to running flat, correct. But it gets an EPA estimated 50 miles per gallon.
Dang, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I thought Will from Metal Cloak in his green Jeep, I thought that one was a hybrid.
That's a good question. I don't know. I never took a look to see if it was or not.
I thought it was. Maybe it's one maybe it's a special hybrid one that
I don't know,
a pre-release or something, or a different style.
I don't know. Maybe because I was also talking with Mattson a little bit. I went over and said hi to the guys over at Metal Cloak, and I got to talk with Mattson a little bit, and he said that so far for the 4XE, they have 4 different skid plate styles.
Really?
For the 4XE and the different trim models for the 4XE.
Maybe they get Jeeps early.
I don't know. Either that, I'm sure they have a huge customer base that's willing to let them model things on their Jeeps as well. Yeah. But I do know that Metal Cloak has a really nice fleet of Jeeps at their disposal. that's a pretty cool thing. The thing that just really got me excited was getting rid of the torque converter.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And the fact that now the torque converter is gone, that as soon as you start pushing down on the pedal, you have 400 foot-pounds of torque.
Instantaneous, 400 foot-pounds, 470 pound-feet of torque. Instantaneous, like a manual transmission would, but you don't have to shift it anymore. Like, right. It's an automatic. It's kind of the best of both worlds, right?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like watching this now. Now I'm keeping my eye closely on it. And I'm like, is Bronco going to come out with something kind of similar setup? Or is Toyota going to finally come out with their P2 systems? Their hybrids eventually here. So anyways, I'm keeping a close eye on it. My buddy that works over at CARB keeps sending me articles and updates about when things are finally released and he can finally talk about them.
So he
knows that I'm very interested in keeping a close eye on these, so he keeps sending me articles. And so this one is one that he sent, and I was like, interesting. I was kind of going through it. I was like, yeah, whatever. It's another Jeep. I'm not too concerned about it. I'm not too like worked up about it. But then I saw that it was replacing the torque converter.
Yeah.
I was like, interesting. Now you got
that's
me
pretty
going.
Cool.
Yeah.
And you know, a 2-liter turbo that's now producing the most horsepower and torque out of any Jeep out there.
Until they put the Hemi in a Jeep eventually.
Yeah. They're gonna try to keep up with Dodge and what they're doing with the dropping T-Rex. The Hellcat motor and everything.
Yeah. So the other one, so it got me thinking. I asked my buddy, I was like, hey, is Ford working on anything for the Bronco then like that? Because if they're working on a P2 hybrid setup for the Bronco, I might have to withdraw my Bronco ticket and wait for the P2 setup. And he sent me another article that says he's not for sure what they're planning on putting in the Bronco, if they are planning on putting a hybrid setup in it, but Ford is putting a ton of investment right now into electric vehicles with the all electric F-150, the hybrid F-150s, and etc. There is the Lincoln Aviator Grand Touring apparently uses a Ford motor.
Okay.
And it is a hybrid motor. And he said, if anything, that would probably be the one that they'll throw in the Bronco. So he's not for sure. This is all hearsay, but here I went and looked up that motor to see just kind of what the stats are. What are the possibilities of throwing in this hybrid motor into a Bronco, right? And what are we looking at here? So the I went and looked up the Lincoln Aviator. It's the Ford EcoBoost V6, an electric powertrain. They combine to deliver 494 horsepower and 630 pound feet of torque.
Oh my gosh.
Oh man.
The Lincoln Navigator, isn't that a like a Tahoe?
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a big heavy SUV.
Right.
And so even with all of that horsepower and torque, it still does 60 miles an hour in 5.5 seconds. Dang. And it's a heavy beast of a vehicle too.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's kind of the stats of that engine. Mm-hmm. And he said, and so just coming from him and what he knows about the engine side of the world, and he said he's not claiming that it is going in. I'm not going to put that out there, that this engine is what might be going in the Bronco eventually as the hybrid Bronco setup, but that's the most likely candidate as of right now currently.
Cool.
So anyways, yeah, those are some hybrid updates. Electric and gas combining to make some really cool stuff out there. And I thought that we could do a little bit of Jeep content for everybody out there as well, for all of our abundance of Jeep listeners. That,
there you go. Now we don't have to do it for another month.
Exactly. I was going to say like maybe another year. We can get away with it. So anyways, that's the updates, all the updates I have.
Yeah. I pretty much only had the battery pack and fridge on my list. Mm-hmm. So
We did have Spotify happen. Something happened on Spotify. I'm not sure what happened, what caused it, but we had a few people say that episode 124 and 125 was not showing up on Spotify, and then all of a sudden 125 started showing up, but 124 wasn't. And then I don't know what happened, but eventually 124 started showing up too, and it started showing up a week after its release date. So I'm not sure what happened. I tried looking in and messing with settings, and nothing I did would have made the episode start showing up again. So I'm not sure what caused it to start showing up again, but everything should now be back on Spotify. If you're a Spotify listener, I would say sorry, except I have no clue what happened.
Yeah.
And I don't even know what we did to fix it. So
I don't know. I think just there is some weird fluke in the software.
Yeah. I would vote get away from Spotify if you're using it.
I use it. Not for podcasts, though.
Oh, okay.
For music.
Yeah. I don't know. I wouldn't use it for podcasts. So I think there's other platforms out there that are a little nicer to use for podcasting, for podcast listening. Yeah. But to each their own.
Yeah.
You guys can use whatever you want.
If you're already paying for the service of Spotify, then I don't know if it matters.
Yeah.
I mean, there are nice free. Well, let's go off of that a little bit. Which podcast app do you use?
I use mainly Podcast Addict.
Okay.
And that's mainly just because the Podcast Addict platform shows everything that people put in their show notes and their show post. A lot of platforms will actually limit what shows up on their platform from the show notes and the actual post that you're posting from your show, where your RSS feed is.
Right.
And so like on Spotify, I think it only limits it to like 60-70 words will show up on the Spotify feed for your episode, whereas Podcast Addict will show up everything. So if you go and look at, if you've been using Spotify and you're like, I don't see where the Gear Wrench Ultimate Garage giveaway link is in the show notes, it's because Spotify won't show it to you.
No.
So that's just mainly the run reason why I like Podcast Addict, is because it shows everything. And there's other platforms out there that do as well. I don't know if iTunes does. I think iTunes streamlines things a little bit more like Spotify does. Mm-hmm. I think the Google podcast, I think they show everything, right?
I believe so. I think they do.
Yeah.
I know it's a lot more than 60 characters because I'll look at other people's and they have a long list. Mm-hmm. And that's what I use. I use the Google podcast. Mm-hmm.
That's the other one I use if I'm not using Podcast Addict. The only thing I don't like about Podcast Addict is it's just that it downloads the episode to your phone. You can't stream it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. So you have to download it straight to your phone, which if you forget to be on top of deleting your downloaded podcast from your phone, it takes up space on your phone very quickly.
Yes.
So
I never download them unless I'm going to be going offline, you know, like back country or on a plane flight or something. Mm-hmm. And then I download them.
Yeah. That's what's nice about the Google podcasts is that you can just stream it. You don't have to download everything to your phone, and it's it's a very clean.
It shocks me that Podcast Addict doesn't let you stream.
Right? I thought that
because
there's enough of them doing it now where that should be a thing.
Yeah, I thought that would be the standard.
Yeah. So anyways, yeah, that's the Spotify situation. Yes. So Spotify clean. Should be back working for you guys.
Yeah, we'll see if this episode comes out on time.
Right. Yeah. Cool. So let's get into what we've been up to.
Okay. Sounds good.
Because we haven't been up to a whole lot. We've had more updates than than really what we've been up to, because we can't really go out and do any much right now.
No. But I've been playing with Bobcat, and I had a fun weekend. Mm-hmm. So
let's start there.
Oh, okay. Well, so the weekend was the assistant's birthday.
Okay, very cool.
The assistant birthday. She was turning 7.
Not 70?
Not 70. 7. Yeah, that'd be an old assistant.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so we just hung out around the house. We had fun. You know, we had, she had a friend over, and she had her first slumber party. Mm-hmm. So with all the COVID things going on, you know, we didn't really throw a party for her. And we got her these Lego Marios.
Okay, you showed me a couple of videos of these, and I'm intrigued.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So you buy these little kits, and one of them comes with a Mario, and the Mario kind of has a scanner on the bottom of on his like feet. Mm-hmm. And so you can.
Is it like a barcode scanner, infrared scanner? What is it?
It is a barcode scanner.
Okay,
but it can also do color.
Oh.
Okay. And so it can sense different things. And I think it has a gyro inside of it. Because if you move Mario in different ways, it will make different noises.
Okay.
Right? So if it's standing straight up and down and you like tip it right, tip it left, tip it right, tip it left.
Yeah.
It'll act as it'll make noises like Mario's walking.
Okay.
Right? And if you just lift it off the ground and move it back to the table and lift it off the ground and move it back to the table, to make noises like it's jumping.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. And if you do it the 3 times, for all you Mario fans out there, if you do it the 3 times, on the 3rd time, it'll do the big jump noise.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. And so...
kaboom. That one?
Yeah. No, it's like the wee.
Oh, okay.
And so what you do is you buy these kits, and then you can start making your own Mario courses. And the different things have barcodes on them. Like there's the POW blocks, the P block, the like the question marks. There's okay. Enemies and like the bombs and Koopas. Power. And yeah, well, they also sell different outfits that the Mario can wear, and uh-huh. it'll recognize when you put on different outfits. Uh-huh. And so we have the squirrel outfit and the fire outfit. Uh-huh. And so it has the white hat and white pants, and you know, when you put it all on there, then it, like when you start walking it, it'll make like you're throwing noise. Flame. Yeah. The fireballs out. And nice. So it was a lot of fun, you know, and you just run it through, and it has a start, like the start is the noise that when you go down a pipe. Right. Okay. And then so you do that. And as soon as you hit that one, it starts a countdown timer for a minute. And then you have 1 minute to get to the flagpole. And uh-huh. the flagpole has another barcode scanner on it. So once you end, it'll, you know, do the do 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 do.
We need to, we should have loaded all the Mario sounds on the soundboard before have. Doing this episode.
Yeah. And so, it was, you know, and the point is to see how many, coins you can get. In your obstacle course, in the Mario obstacle course. Oh, interesting.
Okay.
So we started building all these different courses. So
you have a minute to win it?
You have a minute to get as many coins as you can. Yeah, and it's fun. I mean, we left the assistant at Grandma and Grandpa's house, and the assistant and I came home, and we each did a round, you know, without the little one, you know, around us. Uh-huh. So, you know, it's pretty cool. It's pretty fun, and... I don't think that it's going to get set up a lot, but it's a really innovative by Lego and Nintendo to put this thing together.
Have you seen the VR, the virtual reality Mario Kart racing now?
Yes.
That's one that I really want
to get. That looks really interesting also.
Right?
Yeah.
So for those out there who have not seen this virtual reality Mario Kart racing, what it is you get a remote controlled car, an RC car, right? That looks like one of the Mario Kart carts, right?
Yes.
From the game.
Uh-huh.
And you set up
you design
a course throughout your house or through the room, and you have these gates so that you have to like drive the RC car through the gates to get around the course. But what's going on is you play it on, I think it's a Nintendo Switch
probably,
and on the screen of the Switch it shows the video feed from your RC car as it's going around the course, but then it also inputs into the video feed of virtual reality players.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got like Koopa over here that you can shoot him with shells. He's not actually in your room, but he's on the video on the Switch.
Yeah.
And so you're going through this course that you made in your room, driving through the screen of the Switch, and you're able to watch and interact with the game while your car is actually driving around your room.
It's like a Pokemon Go meets an RC car.
It is. It's pretty cool. So anyways, that would be the one that I would want to get.
Yeah, that one looks cool. I don't think the assistant is of that age yet.
But, okay.
I mean, who knows? I mean, she might be able to drive an RC car.
Uh-huh.
But I've seen her drive like one of those very basic RC cars that actually they're tough to drive. The ones that can go straight, but when you want to turn, you reverse and it goes one way.
Uh-huh.
Those things are ridiculous. I should bring over my RC truck and see how she'll do, and then maybe we'll upgrade.
Yeah.
She did get a Switch from her other grandparents.
Okay.
And so she might get that down the road there, so we'll see.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah.
So what else did you do this weekend? You said you were playing with Bobby.
Yeah, that was more this week. I started playing with Bobcat to try and figure out what the heck is going on with the vibration.
Uh-huh. And what'd you find out?
So we kind of assumed that the vibration was coming from the tires.
Mm-hmm.
Because we, in a way, have more or less replaced everything on underneath the vehicle.
Yeah.
And so you left Kermit over here because I started drawing out for Snail Armor the tailgates.
Mm-hmm.
And then I stole the wheels off of Kermit and put them onto Bobcat so that because Kermit's can drive 70 miles an hour and its tires are balanced.
Yep.
So I said, well, if that works, speaking of which, we did have somebody wrote out and said they want to know more about balance speeds. So that might be another episode we can talk about.
Or different options to balance off-road tires.
Yeah. Yeah. Something.
Okay.
And so I swapped the tires. I put Bobcat's tires on Kermit. I put Kermit's tires on Bobcat. And more or less, I swapped them because I don't have enough jack stands laying around right now to just keep Kermit up in the air.
Gotcha.
Because of Samantha's using a few of the jack stands. So I drove Bobcat down the freeway and vibrations still happening right at the same speed.
Dang it.
Yeah.
I could have sworn. I don't know. To me, it feels like a driveline vibration. But your driveline has been redone like 3 times this year.
Yeah.
And so I was like, the only other thing it feels like to me would be tires. I was like, it's got to be tires. Just these your Toyos are so many years old, so worn down. They're just probably off balance. And that was not it.
No.
Yeah.
So I've been writing a few stories or making a few stories on Instagram, and I've had an amazing amount of feedback.
Nice.
And so, yeah, it's like every time I look at the phone, it's like 5 or 6 new people writing me. A lot of people say, change your drive line. And I'm like, it's brand new.
Yeah.
You know, and they go, oh. And then I don't really hear anything back from, but a lot of other people were, you know, continually trying to give me ideas.
Yeah.
And a lot of the ideas that came through are, I just need to adjust the pinion angle.
Mm-hmm.
And or check my pinion nut or check the rear output nut and make sure that they're not loose.
Yeah.
Because if they start getting loose, they'll have a small vibration in them.
Yeah.
And so before I start ripping the drive shaft, I mean, I might as well take the drive shaft off and check those in the mix of all this.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm currently in the process of putting my axle shims underneath the axle, and I'm putting the axle back on the leaf springs. And that'll be a temporary solution to tell me if I realign it with those shims and if the vibration changes, that it's probably the angle of the dangle.
Yeah. The angle of the dangle.
So
what was your pinion angle at before you put the shims under?
It's stock.
Oh.
Okay. It's never been rotated. It's the perches are still in the same exact position.
What is that angle though?
I think it's,
did you measure it?
I think it's 0. I don't know.
Okay.
Whatever, but it's parallel to the ground.
So you didn't measure it then with your angle finder?
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. And so I've lifted the vehicle and more, but you know, and I think that maybe because of going to the bigger Chevy 63s, that might have been the culprit that moved it out of enough angle that now creates this vibration.
Could be. I mean, because if you're lifting your vehicle, it's from stock, you have a much less of a driveline angle, right? And your pinion angle at stock. If you lift your vehicle, your transfer case is going up while your pinion stays the same, right? Essentially.
Yeah.
So you're making that a more severe angle. So I wonder if you just, I mean, if you're 2 degrees off of the range of like a 4 degree range, it'll cause vibration. So I wonder if you just ended up hitting that when we did the Pro Comp 63s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I don't, I mean, maybe because I had a 3-inch lift before and I wasn't having any problems.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started rearranging the layout from the Chevy 63s. I put in a new third member and I've put in new axle shafts and a two or three new drive lines and a new transmission and T case, you know, all underneath there and all kind of within the same range of time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe it is that it just got lifted up a little bit more higher and it's just not aligned as well as it should be anymore.
I mean, you have an angle finder. Why don't we just put the angle? Let's put the angle finder on it when we're done recording here. Go put the angle finder on it. See what it's at without the shims because you haven't bolted them back up yet.
No.
So we can take the shims off really quick. See what the angle, your the angle of your dangle is at without the shims real quick, and then see if that's out of spec, out of what we should be
at. Yeah. Well, range. So because I have a CV or a double cardan up top. It needs to be for the best and least amount of drive or vibrations. It needs to be perfectly in line with the drive shaft for the best.
Yeah.
Shaft. So the pinion needs to point right at the in line with the drive line.
Okay. At the which angle. It doesn't at all.
No.
You're like parallel to the ground. Yeah.
Yes. Now I did, for those that have been keeping up with the story, I am on a one piece drive line.
Mm-hmm.
And the two piece would make it like a crazy angle.
It would make it pretty crazy.
One piece, it reduces the angle significantly. So I think that's been saving me in the past. But I am going to go back to a two piece.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. So even if the shims are the answer, I'm not sure if I'm going to cut it off and make it that angle or wait till I get the two piece in and put it at that angle.
Yeah.
Plus I need to do work on that axle because I want to put I want to armor it and do a few other upgrades to it, you know? And so it's like,
I don't think you should armor it and do the other upgrades to this particular axle. No, I think you should wait because, we're planning on eventually putting some big axles under Bobcat. So I would personally, if I were you, just wait, you've gone 20 years, 20, 25 years on with a non-armored axle. Rear axle. I think you can go another 6 to 8 months.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, we've got, in the long scheme of things, I think I have two projects lined up and I don't know if Bobcat's going to fall between one and two. At minimum, I just need to get it back on the road and know that I can't drive it over 60 if the, if the angles aren't working right, I did get the trailer. So now if worst case scenario, I can tow it, and towing Clifford and towing the truck, I go up the hill faster than I would with Bobcat anyway. So, now it just is the unload and load time. That's the difference.
Yeah.
But
I'm with Mike. I think that trailers are for boats.
Yeah. I do to an extent. I think this is similar to our argument that we were having with Corey about ice chests and fridges. I think it depends on the distance you're going.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I think a cooler is for the amount of the duration of time that you're going to be out, whether you're going to have a cooler or a fridge. And for trailers, I think it's, like if I'm driving to Moab, I'm going to want to take a trailer.
Yeah.
If I'm driving to Fordyce, I'm going to drive.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. So what
it
else
also
has been
determines
going on?
How hard you can wheel.
True. What else has been going with Bobby though?
That's about it.
You had some other fun things show up while you were working on those.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about them or are we going to keep them secret?
One of them I've known for a while. I did break a brake line in the middle of fixing it. And so I plugged it. And it's slowly leaking right as we're talking right now with a towel under it. And so I got to get another brake line. I did notice that I do need a longer, I have like a rubber brake line hose that goes from like the gas tank to the axle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. it is at its upper limits.
Yeah.
And so I need to replace that. I also noticed that pretty much at full droop, I am being limited by my shocks.
Mm-hmm.
So I either need to relocate the shocks, like invert them at the top to make them have a little bit more flex and maybe get a little longer shocks, or punch holes through the bed and raise the top end of the shock and get a little longer shocks that way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing. Plus, my axle right now has a pretty severe crack.
It's almost worse than your frame crack at your body mount was.
Yes. It's pretty bad.
It's pretty bad.
And so, I mean, that I have a spare axle.
Yeah.
For that.
Mm-hmm.
Also. So it's, to me, it's if the pinion angle solves it,
mm-hmm.
then I'm just simply going to swap out. I'm going to cut the perches off of the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much swap it out and just get it back going.
Yeah.
So that I can concentrate on moving forward with Samantha.
Cool.
I think.
Yeah.
Or this might be give me a good reason to actually get the two-piece drive line in and then relocate it.
Mm-hmm. I think we could set up a cross member back there and fix your shock problem and the two-piece drive line at the same time. Maybe. I don't know where the carrier bearing sits on the two piece. So how far forward or backward it would be.
I think it's supposed to be about halfway. Okay. Or is it roughly where it is.
Okay.
I don't think we can mount the upper part of the shocks and the carrier bearing at the same place.
No, but we could build a structure all while we're up there under doing that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Fun times with Bobby.
Yeah. It's back under surgery.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Nice. I have been doing ham radio stuff.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So I got to go back up to Mount Vaca, where the N6 ICW repeater system is located, the main transmitter site.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised and very impressed when I went up there this time. Because last time I was up there was like a week, maybe, mm-hmm. 4 days after the fire ripped through there. And there was just nothing. It was a wasteland. Now I went up there and it's been 3 weeks, 2.5, 3 weeks now after the fire. And there are insects everywhere.
Okay.
And they are really freaking annoying.
Yeah, I bet.
There was a few squirrels, a few birds hanging out too. So it was just really interesting to see how quickly wildlife was starting to come back into the area, even though everything was decimated.
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting being up there. The air quality was still sucked. You couldn't see anything you couldn't even see that you were up on a mountain.
Yeah.
You're just up in this cloud of smoke.
Yay.
And, but it was fun. I got to be up there and I got to climb all the way to the top of the tower, which is a 150-foot tower. I got to climb to the top of it, and we set up rigging on the tower so that we can start sending antennas and coax feed lines and everything up and down the tower without killing people by dropping it off the tower kind of thing.
Okay.
So we set up rigging, we set up a bunch of rope, we set up a couple coax feed lines, and we started testing all the antennas on the tower. So I was very impressed so far. All the antennas we've tested good.
Wow.
Near the top of the tower.
Okay.
And I think that goes a long way to show about how tall the tower is and but still, even at the top of the tower, there's a couple of boxes that are antenna tuners. And so what they do is the signal goes into that box, and then it tunes the signal and the frequency of it to make sure that it matches with the antenna.
Okay.
And that box was melted.
Oh, dang.
All the way at the top of the tower. It was a plastic box, you know, like a Pelican case.
Mm-hmm.
And it was melted. And all of the insulation, electrical tape, weather taping, insulation, and everything around the coax and jumper connectors was all melted together. So it was all just a mass of rubbery goo that I had to dig through with an X-Acto knife while leaning off of the tower, you know, 5 feet leaning off of the very top of the tower, 150 feet up. It was fun. But getting through that rubbery goo was very interesting. And then to test the antennas and see that they're still testing good, I was like, wow, That's impressive. But then we went down about halfway down the tower. Some of the jumper cables were testing bad, but the antennas were testing good. And then we got down to the near the bottom of the tower, and almost every antenna at the bottom of the tower was completely done for.
Sure. That yeah. makes sense.
Yeah. So we at least got, we got about 80% of the antennas on the tower tested and figured out. So we know for the most part which ones are good, which ones are bad. We have a game plan of which ones they want to replace. They want to go through. It's probably been 20, 25 years since that tower has been updated.
Wow.
So they're like, this is going to be awesome now, because then they'll get to really update the towers and put the antennas up there that they really want up there to make the systems work the way they want them to work. And so it'll be really neat. We have it all kind of mapped out, and they're coming up with a game plan. And now we've got to go back up. The next step is to go back up and cut out all of the hard line that's running up the middle of the tower. Mm. So it's just, it's a really thick, it's like an inch, 3/4 of an inch diameter. Hard line coax that's going up the in middle of the tower for all the feed lines, and all those are bad. They're all bad. So we have to cut them all down and bring them out of the tower. One, drop them down the middle of the tower, one line at a time.
And how many are in there?
15, dang. 20, something like that.
The whole height?
No, they kind of split and cut off at each antenna as you work up the tower. So at the very top of the tower, there's three antennas. So there's three hard lines going to the very top. So that's 150 foot of solid, solid hard line, solid pipe, essentially copper pipe that needs to come out. And so they have to cut it with a grinder in like 5 to 10 foot sections so they can pull it out of the tower and then drop it down and cut 5, 10 feet off. Pull it out, drop it down further, keep doing that. So it's going to be a long process, time-consuming process. But that's the update on the N6 ICW system. It was fun. I got to be up there for about 4 hours.
Wow.
Up at the up on the tower in one way or another. And it was cool. It was fun.
Did you guys communicate? Did you communicate with the ground by a ham radio?
We did, yeah. Yep, so I had a little radio on my harness right here with a little handheld microphone. So I could bring it off and talk, or just kind of lean it over and talk off my harness. But yeah, had a little handheld. Nice. We were running Simplex on it. So it's fun.
Cool.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, that sounds like a good time.
Yeah.
Did you get to play with your new Bluetooth radio yet?
I did. That came in on Friday.
Okay.
So I've had it now, I don't know, what's today? Wednesday? 4 days. So 4 days.
5 days.
I've had it a decent amount of time, and I just hooked it up and started playing around with it this morning.
Okay.
And I was really, really concerned with some of the functions and how they were explained. Because it's definitely a Chinese radio and a Chinese sold radio. It's imported and distributed. It has a couple of distribution points here in the United States, but the whole manufacturing and the company that owns and controls the software for it, the firmware, everything is a Chinese company. So it's like there's a language barrier between their product description of what the radio can do versus what we know of radios doing and what the radio actually does.
Oh, sure.
So I was very concerned. It was $180, $179. And so far, I'm very impressed with it.
Oh, yeah?
My main concern was the APRS function.
Yeah.
Because it says that it does APRS, but it's all built into the app of the radio. I mean, the whole radio is controlled by an app on your phone. Hmm. And it's mostly under Android.
Okay.
So if you have an iPhone, you don't have near the amount of features available to you because Apple likes to lock stuff up like that. Mm-hmm. Android has the full feature set of that the radio is capable of. But what I was concerned about was there wasn't quite 100% clear as to whether the radio did the APRS like the Yaesu does, your Yaesu FTM400 does.
Okay.
Or whether it was the app and your phone doing the APRS and sending out your APRS data via your phone's internet connection.
Oh, okay.
And so rather than the radio sending out your APRS data and it being picked up by DigiPeters or iTunes. Right.
But is it, okay. I understand what you're saying. So what, and then I have a follow-up question. Okay. What is it doing? Do you know?
It's doing both.
Oh.
So you can set it to do both.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is pretty neat, because if you're within cell reception,
yeah,
every single APRS packet will go out and will get posted on the internet, which means your messages will always work when you're messaging people, your APRS data, your tracking will pick up every single breadcrumb that you're dropping.
Cool.
The radio tends to be sporadic because it just depends on the bandwidth of APRS usage in your area. You know, if you're transmitting an APRS signal the exact same time as somebody else, those signals kind of cancel each other out. Digipeaters can't pick up two simultaneous signals.
Oh, weird.
So it all depends on the APRS traffic in your area as to whether or not your APRS signal actually makes it into the APRS system.
Hmm.
So it's kind of nice having it send out on both.
Right.
And see, you know, which one makes it into the system.
Right. So my question was, is your phone gathering your GPS location and data and then sending it to the unit?
Yes.
And then uploading it?
Uh-huh.
So you still need the phone, like the unit doesn't have GPS built into
correct.
It.
Correct. That is correct. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Most like your Yaesu, the Yaesu FTM400, the GPS receiver is built into the head unit that you have up above your rearview mirror.
Yes.
And so with the GPS built into that, this radio doesn't have a GPS receiver built into it anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So it relies on your phone, your tablet, whatever you're running the radio off of in order to get your GPS signal, which is just fine. It's all built into the app there, and mm-hmm. you can't run the radio without that. So you kind of know going into it that you need to have a phone or tablet that you can run this radio off of. Otherwise you can't use the radio.
Right.
So, it's pretty cool so far. The APRS functions pretty nicely. I haven't gotten to actually test it yet. And what's interesting is there isn't a whole lot of user manual. The user manual is non-existent, essentially, for the radio.
Yeah, or it's in a language you don't know.
Exactly. And so what's cool is there's been a support group on Facebook that has started for this radio. And a bunch of the people on that group have actually created PDFs of how to do specific functions of the radio.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it's all in English. It's user supplied. So it's from the user saying, oh, here's how you do this, rather than an engineer on the engineer side saying, well, this is the way we designed it. here's the way it's designed to function. Instead, it's a user saying, here's how it actually works from the user side, from the UI.
Got it.
So it's pretty cool. There's a bunch of different PDFs up on that Facebook page in the files section as to how to set up the APRS, how to connect the radio with the Bluetooth, make sure it's connected to your device, how to program the radio, how to set up all of the repeater frequencies on it, how to set up talk groups on it, how to set up network groups on it, how to set up an APRS group on it, which is another really cool feature of the radio. How to do a bunch of different things, right? How to use your phone as the push to talk.
Yeah.
As your microphone for the radio or a tablet or whatever you're using. So I'm really excited now that I just plugged it in. I went through all the settings and looked at everything it's capable of and then read up on one of those user PDFs of how the APRS works, because that was my main concern. And it seems like everything's going to work out for my uses for it. It seems like it is going to be a little clunky with a certain number of things. A being programming the radio.
Oh, yeah.
There's no way to upload a spreadsheet into the radio.
Oh, really?
You have to manually put in every single repeater, every Ugh. Single channel you want to put in on the radio. Luckily, you can do it from your phone, so it's kind of easy to just punch in the numbers as you go, but it's if you have 300 repeaters you need to plug in, it's going to suck.
Can you put 300 in? Because I think my Yaesu only lets me do 100.
Nope, your Yaesu will do, I want to say, 1200 to 1500. It's really? At least 1000.
Oh, wow.
Your Baofeng is what will only do 128.
Okay.
So your programming is limited to how many channels you can have because of your Baofengs. Wow. That's how I set up your programming, right?
Okay.
So I gave you the most common 128 channels that you would need to use.
Right.
And then just to keep, so your Yaesu and your two Baofeng handhelds are all the same.
Mm-hmm.
That's why.
Got it.
So this one, you can have pretty much unlimited memories. Your memory channels are dependent on how much memory your phone or tablet has.
Oh, really?
Yes.
It stores it all there.
Stores it all there. So none of the settings are actually stored in the radio itself, which is another kind of interesting way that this radio functions.
Yeah.
All the settings are stored on your app. So A, if you want to use different devices to use your radio. So say you're out one day and you use your phone, and then you go out on a wheeling trip and you want to use a tablet to run the radio. Whatever settings you have up on your tablet versus your phone are going to be whatever settings the radio is going to use. So if you want it to be the same, you have to manually go in and set every setting exactly the same between all your devices. So that was one kind of clunky feature. I'm like, that's kind of cool. I love the cloud feature of Gaia GPS. So if you go and change a map or a track or something on one device, it changes it on all your devices.
Right.
This, I wish they did the same thing. And I think that they can. It's very possible to do. So I'm hoping that's one feature they'll implement so that you can run multiple devices with this radio and have them all set up to be the way you want them set up.
Yeah, I could see advantages both ways, though, as well. Also, and then maybe that, you know, maybe it should sync and you could turn it to not sync.
Yeah.
You know, but if you're using your phone, you might not want some of the features on because maybe it takes screen space, or maybe, you know, because it's a smaller device, you don't want to, you know, have some of the features going, where if you're, you know, like running a tablet, maybe you're primarily focused on the APRS side of things. But if you're on your phone, you're just using it as a handheld, you know, you know, so there could be some different ways that you're going to use each device.
Yeah.
But I do think that, you know, syncing is a very important process that needs to, should be in there.
You brought up an interesting thing that I didn't think of, and I don't know if it's possible. It might be because it runs on Bluetooth 5.0, which can have something like 30 concurrent connections. I don't know how much it is.
Yeah.
But you can connect multiple Bluetooth devices to the radio at one time.
Yeah.
So they even have, you know how most handheld microphones are corded to the radio?
Yes.
This has a Bluetooth handheld option.
Oh.
So it's not tied to the radio.
Oh,
you
weird.
Can just have it on like a magnet or a clip or something on your dashboard, and then
that's
the radio is tucked away at the very end of your vehicle, and you just Bluetooths to the radio, right?
Heck yeah.
So I'm like, that's a really cool feature.
No cable?
No cable at all.
Yes.
So like, I was wondering if you could run that as the Bluetooth, your push to talk, or your phone as your push to talk or something, and then run the APRS part of it on your tablet.
Yeah.
So I want to look into that now. I didn't even think of that.
That's interesting.
So,
or how about, you know, if you can use your phone as the push to talk, can you then push it to your stereo in the car?
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting.
So they've also made it, so they've started to work on implementing Android Auto and Apple Car.
Okay.
Apple CarPlay. So with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, you can run specific apps off of your phone, right? So that's what they're going to try. I think that was one of the most requested features. And this company, it seems like, has been very on top of taking the user's feedback and starting to work on those and implement them right away.
Okay.
So it's not like they're just putting out a radio and saying, hey, here's the radio, figure it out and do it. They're actually like doing a lot of different things to improve on the functionality of the radio and taking the user's feedback as the driving force for that change on the radio.
Right.
So that'll be really cool to see if they can implement that and get Android Auto or Apple CarPlay set up.
Yeah, I wonder how that would work.
Well, you'd like, have to have a push to talk button.
Okay, I was going to say,
run a Vox.
Yeah, if you're having a conversation with your buddy in the car, is it now streaming out to everybody?
Yeah. So yeah, you'd have to have a push talk button, which is essentially like what PCI or Rugged Radios does in side by sides or Ultra 4 cars or whatever your race cars are. There's a little button to hit that will trigger the radio or intercom system to turn on.
Ah.
So there's that. It's a little, it looks like a wristband, and you can put it on your steering wheel or a roll cage or something and put it, so hit it to turn on the push talk. So that's how that would work.
Okay.
But yeah, so far I'm impressed with it, especially for the price. I'm going to hook it up to some antennas later this week, hopefully, and play around with it some more and see if I can really start dialing in and see how things actually work.
Yeah.
Rather than just going through the settings and seeing how things theoretically work.
Right. Yeah. I think it's an interesting concept.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because I think a lot of us usually have a phone or tablet on our dash already.
Yep.
And now if you can eliminate one of the things that is like you might have up there, like if you eliminate the you know, the CB or the ham radio or the box that's out there, and you just, you know, use your phone, you know, it frees up your visibility out the windshield, but it also streamlines the process of, you know, what's happening up there.
Yeah.
You know, 100%. And I know that, like, in Charlotte, we've been talking to, I have another FTM 400 sitting in a box on a shelf that I've been meaning to put into Charlotte. And the biggest kind of problem that we're having is where to put the external speaker.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether I'm drilling holes in the plastic or I'm mounting a speaker up high or, you know, putting it down low under the chair or, you know, something, you know, I've been trying to figure that solution out. But now it's like, well, if I can just have it be out of my phone and come through my car speakers, that's kind of a really easy sort of solution with no wires that I have to run.
Yep. As long as you don't want to listen to music.
True.
Yeah. Which would not work for me.
No.
Gotta have my tunes. I need my tunes while
I'm on the trail. Yeah, I did move the 4Runner around to the, you know, the shop, and I turned it on. It's a boom, 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 boom. You know, like, oh, geez, turn this down.
Oh, that's funny. Did you take the Kermit for a joyride at all?
No.
Okay.
I wanted to take it out with Bobcat's tires on it.
Oh, yeah.
And to see if we get a vibration.
Oh, and yeah. I mean, Kermit already vibrates, though. It's a weird oscillating vibrate. Like, it'll run perfectly fine at 70 miles an hour. And then, like, all of a sudden, I don't want to say the whole rig, it's not terribly bad. But the whole thing starts shaking for like 5 seconds, and then it goes away and drives smooth as can be for another, I don't know, 5 minutes or so. And then it starts shaking again for 5 seconds, and it goes away and drives smoothly. And I'm like, I have no clue what that could be, 'cause it's oscillating. It's not a consistent thing that happens with certain speeds or whatnot. It's
Yeah. But if we take Kermit for a joyride and, you know, we hit freeway speeds and it doesn't have a vibration, then
we know
the nose can assume the tires are okay.
Gotcha.
And we can literally scratch that one. Like, you know, like, even if I solve the pitman, you know, or angle and put the tires back on, it still might vibrate, you know? So if we can eliminate the tire scenario, then, that'll be good.
Cool. Yeah. Maybe we can do that. We might have some time today. So.
All right.
Before we switch tires back and take Kermit up for the 22 RE's final resting place.
Yeah.
It won't be the final. He's going to come back to my garage to get rebuilt.
Cool.
But it should be good. I have a couple of welding projects I'm working on. I got a bunch of new clamps.
Yes.
Welding clamps.
I saw them on your Instagram post.
Hussman talked me into them. So
he's good at that.
He's very good at that. So, I got some welding clamps and they have turned out. I've already done a little bit of welding with the new Bernard consumables. So much nicer than the big fat ass Miller nozzle.
Huh. Interesting.
And it's just because I can get closer to the weld. So I don't have this far away arc, and everything is just welding so much cleaner now.
Oh, cool.
And so that's really the big benefit. Yeah. It's a nice, they're shiny. They're shiny consumables, right? They're shiny nozzle and everything, but it's just, with such a smaller nozzle, I can just get so much closer and have the correct arc distance.
Cool.
On the weld.
Nice.
So I got a couple of welding projects coming up. I'll be showing some pictures as we go through them. One is Gearwrench Corey got some of the Rough Stuff DIY sliders that are kind of build your own, but they're universal. The universal fit DIYs.
Yeah.
That don't have any bends in them and everything's just straight. You just have to cut pipe at a 45 degree angle is really the hardest challenge. And then welding it, I guess.
Yeah. Welding it would be the hardest challenge.
I guess so. So we got a set of those. Gearwrench Corey got it, and I'm assembling them and putting them together. So I'm working on those over the next couple of days. I should be able to get everything cut and tacked together by the weekend.
Oh, cool.
So keep an eye on Instagram. I'll show you guys kind of updates on how that's going as I go through that. I'm shooting a video of it. That's just kind of a vlog style video because I don't know how to do how-to videos. So I'm just going to kind of go through and have some nice time lapse and some videos of going through the process of doing it all. And I'm working on another welding project, which will be fun too, but it's going to take a lot longer because it's a lot of welding. So we'll see. Once I kind of get close to finishing that, I'll let the information out as to what it is.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think that's about it. that's all my updates, all I've been up to. So I've just been up to radio stuff pretty much and welding projects now that we can't wheel.
Right. Well, that's what it, I mean, that's how it comes down is, well, we can't go outside. So then we got to turn in and figure out what we're going to like, oh, I'll clean the shop again or I'll, you know, work on Bobcat, figure out the vibration or.
Do you want to reorganize the shop?
It needs to get cleaned up a little, but I don't want to reorganize it.
Okay. So we already did that once this year.
Yeah. But I mean, I need to, I've got Brennan from Trail 4R coming down and we're going to work on one of his rigs on Saturday.
Oh, are you putting all the old man Emu stuff on? Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's going to be
looks good.
That stuff looks so sweet. Mm-hmm. So we're going to do that and I need to clean. So the bay that's available that has a broken rig in front of it right now needs to all get finished so that we can bring the 4Runner in.
Gotcha.
So
are you guys coming? Or is he coming over Saturday or what?
Saturday morning.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll see if I'm caught up with things. I can come over and play around, help out too.
Yeah.
Or just get in the way. So.
Well, yeah, we can. I definitely could. We could probably use an extra hand, and we could definitely use a film person. So,
oh, that's right.
Either way,
film lackey.
A film lackey. Maybe we'll. Maybe I'll see if I can contact George.
Do you need? Yeah. Do you need the hero back then?
I might.
Okay,
we'll talk.
Okay. All right. Cool. Do you got anything else for everybody?
No, I think that's all.
How do people get a hold of me, Jimmy?
They can write you on Instagram at 4x4toyotatyler or message you or send you an email at tyler@snailtrail4x4.com. They can also probably get a hold of you through Morflate on Instagram, or there's probably a Morflate contact us section on your website. They can find you on Facebook on the as Tyler. So I don't know how they find you. You could contact him through Tyler on in the NorCal 4x4 rescue page.
Look at the admins
or
on the page. You'll find
you
it.
Can scream for help on the Snail Trail 4x4 Facebook page.
Yep.
You don't have a Twitter. You don't have a TikTok.
No.
You have a Pinterest.
I do actually, but I use it for cooking stuff.
Get a hold of Tyler on his Pinterest, which is I love to cook Tyler, and we don't cook Tyler. He just loves to cook.
Commas are important, people.
Yes.
That's like that t-shirt. Commas are important, and it has like, let's eat, comma, grandma, and let's eat, grandma, with no comma.
Right.
Yeah. Commas are important. Punctuation's important.
Okay, I don't know. Did I miss any?
Ham radio? I don't have my radio set up though at home, so that's probably not the best way right now.
Yeah. You can call him K6TLR and he might answer.
Yeah, maybe.
What repeater would you be on if you're at home listening?
Probably 805.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of action going on the 805 right now because there's nobody on the Rubicon. Mm-hmm. But that's usually the one I'm monitoring. If I have my radio on and set up and on in my office is the 805, just because that's kind of the off-roaders one around here.
Okay.
N6ICW is kind of fun. There's some really off the wall chats that happen every now and then on N6ICW. And there's a couple of other good repeaters in the Sacramento system that get some off the wall chatter. And you're just kind of like, really? You guys remember this is all public, right? Mm-hmm. People, anybody can listen to this. Yeah. So anyways, I'm usually on the Rubicon's 805 though.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So how can people get a hold of me?
I don't know. I knew you were going to ask that. Let's see. They can do Instagram, which is snailtrail4x4. They can do email, which is jimmy@snailtrail4x4.com. They can do Twitter, although you never check it, so you probably won't respond. That's just snailtrail4x4.
Yep.
They can do Snail Armor on the website, snailarmor.com, the Instagram page, Snail Armor. And I think that's it. Do you have any other social medias for Social Armor or for Social Armor?
Social Armor? No. Not for Snail Armor. I just have the website and Instagram.
Okay. Cool.
Which we did release and talk about the custom.
Yes.
You need to see it.
I need to see it. It looks good in Charlotte. Pictures. I can imagine it looks better in person.
Yeah.
But yeah, we need to get a giant MF logo going on things now. So anyways, the Snail Armor stuff is all up there. Let's see, what else can people get a hold of? The Patreon? Sure. They can find you through Patreon. We got another Patreon supporter, which looks like a company almost.
Really?
Yeah.
We'll talk about it next episode.
Okay. The Patreon Facebook page for the Snail Trail Facebook page, if you're a patron.
If you're a patron.
If you can get a hold of them that way. Let's see what else. You can send in snail mail.
Yeah.
Pun intended. I forget what the thing is, though. It's a P.O. box.
P.O. box 15-7 or 15-74 to Loomis, California, 95650.
There you go. So send in your love letters to him. If you have any good love letters that you want to hear, or convince him to play you some silky smooth bedtime stories. He takes check over the P.O. box mail address and also Venmo. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What else? Is there anything else I missed?
No.
Bat signals?
That's pretty good.
If you throw up a bat signal in the NorCal region, he'll respond as well. We've had that work for Jimmy sometimes.
Yeah. As long as it's not smoky, I can probably pull that one off.
Well, that one works just fine because it is a lot lower in the sky now. So you just have to be in a closer region. I think that's about it. Yeah. Do you have any final words of advice?
Advice?
Not necessarily.
Don't tug on Superman's cape.
And with that, my friends, keep crawling. All right, guess what?
What?
I got one for you this time.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know you were funny.
I'm usually not. I have to have help here. It took me a little bit to actually figure this one out.
Okay.
So we'll see what happens here.
All right, ready.
So my dad had a birthday recently, right?
Cool. Congratulations.
And thank you to him, I guess. Mm-hmm. But as I handed him his 50th birthday card, he looked at me with tears in his eyes and he said, "You know, one would have been enough."
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any final words of advice?
Advice?
Not necessarily.
Don't tug on Superman's cape.
Okay, and I guess with that, my friends, let's go crawling. Keep crawling. You threw me off with Superman's cape.